Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The CDC was one of the most respected public health agencies in the world. It's still filled with bright minds, but something has also changed. In the middle of this historic pandemic, the CDC is not the public face of reliable information. There have been major uncharacteristic technical missteps on testing, for example. And all this is happening at the exact moment when the agency's expertise in disease surveillance, data collection, and public health communication are needed the most. So how did this happen? And when did it happen? And how can it be fixed? This hour on Point, putting the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention back at the center of America's public health response. And we're going to begin today with two people with extensive experience inside the CDC. Dr. Richard Besser joins us. He's the president and CEO of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. He served as acting CDC director from January to June in 2009 and worked for many years at the CDC as an infectious disease epidemiologist. And he joins us from Princeton, New Jersey. Dr. Besser, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Meghna. It's great to be here.
And also with us today is Dr. Pierre Rolland. He retired from the CDC after 26 years there. He retired in 2019, and he was most recently the deputy branch chief of viral pathogens at the CDC. Dr. Rolland, welcome to you.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, I would like to actually start with a very concrete and recent example of what seems to be an uncharacteristic misstep made by the CDC, and I think both of you are probably familiar with this. This just comes from reporting last week that the CDC was combining tests for active COVID-19 infections or test results for active COVID-19 infections and the results from antibody testing for people who may have had the disease before. Now, that gives a really muddied picture of where the disease is actively growing and spreading versus who has had it. Dr. Besser, can I just start with you? Why? Can you explain at all why the CDC would even mistakenly combine these two tests?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that should not have happened. The CDC receives data from states, and they report voluntarily to the CDC. And the CDC needs to have in place quality controls to make sure that doesn't happen. What happened was that states were combining that information and sending it forward as their data on COVID testing. And CDC either didn't ask or didn't dig deep enough to know that some of that was antibody testing. The good news on that front was that antibody testing is very, very small proportion of overall testing. And so the impact wasn't great, but as a slip up and as a way, as just a signal for some mistakes that shouldn't happen, that is a good example.
Yeah. And to be clear, a CDC spokeswoman has said that there was no ill intent and that they did attribute the flaw to the reporting system, as you said, because they rely on data coming from the states. But Dr. Rolland, I mean, the CDC has a lot of practice in disease surveillance and in combining data sets from across the United States. I mean, what was missing this time that allowed them to not see this error early on?
Obviously, I didn't saw the data, but as Richard mentioned, the data are coming from the state. CDC has no way to collect data directly in the field. And it was clearly a mistake or a misinterpretation of the data coming, and certainly the lack of question. I don't think it happened before. I think at one time, if you do one test at one time and you want to see who had the infection before, who had the infection on the same day, you can maybe add the two value. But if you're combining data from a certain amount of time, you cannot do that at all. It's just a huge mistake.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back in time then a little to early on in this pandemic when the CDC first released that test that to test for the novel coronavirus. There was a botched reagent or something that led to inaccurate tests being sent to states and state labs couldn't verify it, which set the nation back quite significantly in the timeline in tracking where the coronavirus was in the United States. And Peter Navarro, an advisor to the president and policy coordinator for the Defense Production Act, criticized the CDC about this on NBC's Meet the Press on May 17th.
Early on in this crisis, the CDC, which really had the most trusted brand around the world in this space, really let the country down with the testing, because not only did they keep the testing within the bureaucracy, they had a bad test, and that did set us back.
So that was Peter Navarro from May 17th. Now, Dr. Besser, the CDC has a very celebrated history of generating its own tests for even novel diseases accurately and quickly. It just seems like these missteps are out of character for the agency that we know and had come to expect. Do you have any insight as to how that early testing botching might have happened?
Well, you know, Magda, I ran emergency preparedness and response at CDC for 4 years. And before that was involved in a lot of response as an infectious disease epidemiologist. And in every response, we made mistakes. And mm-hmm. that's going to happen, especially with a new emerging infection as you're trying to move very quickly. And this clearly was a mistake on CDC's part. One of the big challenges here, though, is that CDC was not out in front talking about what they were doing, what they were learning every single day. And I know we're going to get into this in a big way, but it's mm-hmm. critically important during a response because mistakes are going to be made and the agency has to be able to say, here's what we did, here's what we tried, here's where it went wrong, here's what we've learned from this. But they haven't had that opportunity. And so for months, it was over and over again talking about the mistakes, and they were really important mistakes that were made around testing, without the ability to say, well, and here's what we're learning. Here's what you can do to protect your health. Building that trust that is so absolutely essential in every response so that people will do the things to protect their health. That level of trust has been shaken to its core.
So Dr. Besser, let me just follow. Oh, sure. Dr. Roland, go ahead. Go ahead.
If I can intervene a little bit on this faulty test. So the test that CDC developed was looking at three different targets on the virus, just to be sure that we don't have a wrong result or detect the wrong virus. And two of the targets worked very well and keep working, and the third one was contaminated. So one mistake, I think, made by CDC, despite having this third test contaminated, was not to make clear enough that using the first two targets was enough to diagnose the virus. In fact, the WHO test that was used in Europe look only at these two targets. CDC tried to get a little bit better by looking at the third target, and that test didn't work. So the test was faulty, but still allow to make a diagnostic. It need to be interpreted correctly, looking at this faulty third target, but you can still make the diagnostic with that assay.
Well, and so, but then that does dovetail with Dr. Besser's point that it seems as if that even that point wasn't clearly communicated, Roland.
That was a big mistake, is the lack of communication and the rapid communication.
Okay, I do want to just step back in time a little further and compare that to, for example, an extremely effective response that the CDC had. This is way back, because I was reading back about in 1993 when what was ultimately called hantavirus, right, was detected in the mm-hmm. United States. I mean, the CDC dispatched experts I mean, Dr. Rola, maybe you were even part of this team.
Yeah, well,
identified the pathogen, created a new test for it, all within a matter of weeks.
Yeah, we did that in a matter of a week. But because it was a rare disease compared to this one, the test was not distributed outside of CDC until the fall. So we made the first test in May. And for specimen coming at the beginning from the Four Corner area, but quickly from other state. But we work on the test, and we distribute the test only in the fall of 93. And we distribute that only to state lab, not to the general commercial lab. In fact, since there is only one commercial lab that had developed the test and is not very accurate anyway.
Okay. So let me just ask both of you bluntly. As you know, there have been people who have been saying in the media or even writing op-eds, et cetera, that this today's CDC is not the CDC that we knew from 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Dr. Besser, is that true or not?
I don't believe that. I think today's CDC is not being allowed to play the public health leadership role that it should. The same people, you know, so many of the same people are at CDC now who were there during the Zika crisis, which wasn't that long ago. And if you recall back then, every single day we were hearing from CDC, we were hearing from Dr. Anne Schuchat in a reassuring voice, letting us know about mosquitoes, teaching us about mosquitoes and how they spread and what you can do. And as they learned more information, we were able to take that in and we were part of the journey. Right now, we're not part of that journey. And that makes hearing the information coming from political leaders just so disjointed and not based in evidence.
So we'll explore a lot more of that when we come back. Dr. Besser and Dr. Roland, stand by for just a moment. We're taking a look at the CDC, the premier public health agency in the United States and even in the world, and why it's not front and center right now in fighting the novel coronavirus. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast. Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the CDC, the premier public health agency in the United States and one of them in the world, and why it's not more at the center or at the center of America's public health response to the novel coronavirus pandemic. I'm joined today by Dr. Richard Besser. He's president and CEO of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and he served as acting director of the CDC in 2009 and worked for many years at the agency prior to that as an infectious disease specialist. Dr. Pierre Roland is also with us. He retired from the CDC in 2019 after serving there for 26 years. He was most recently deputy branch chief of viral pathogens at the CDC. And Dr. Roland, you heard before the break that Dr. Besser was talking about the side that perhaps it's not so much a change or diminishment of expertise within the CDC, but a political sidelining of the agency. That's the problem. Your response to that?
I fully agree. If you recall, and I think maybe the auditor will recall, during the Ebola outbreak in West Africa and the case that arrived in the U.S., the CDC was daily on the news, either through Dr. Frieden or through other people at CDC, on the news in the U.S., explaining everything that we were doing. And even in the field, I was mostly in Guinea during this outbreak, and we had reporter and press and communication every day. We have a weekly press conference where CDC was on the table and talking. In this outbreak, CDC doesn't seem to exist. In fact, there is a lot of things on the website, but there is no guide from CDC that explain a person that explain how to go through this huge amount of information that are in the database and on the website.
Okay, so help me understand something then. What does it say about the agency that it can so quickly be silenced? I mean, who's controlling what information is being put on the website? Shouldn't we, as the public, no matter what, say, the president or possibly even the White House's coronavirus task force says, shouldn't the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on its own be able to put out the information that is for the public's health?
There is a huge trove of information on the website, of CDC website on COVID. Maybe it's difficult for people to go through all the information. And what we're lacking is someone that daily explain what is done, what is recommended, where it is, where to find more detail. And there is none of that from CDC leadership or CDC Emergency Operations Center people. It's completely in the dark.
Okay, and so Dr. Besser, how does something like that happen so quickly? I mean, one would imagine that Dr. Redfield, current director of the CDC, his primary job ought to be to do everything that he can to put the agency's expertise and information out for the public's good.
Yeah, you know, the CDC it's not a university, it's not a freestanding organization. It's part of the Department of Health and Human Services, which is part of the executive branch. And so while the work that is going on at CDC is developing the best public health evidence and information for moving forward, the ability to interface externally is controlled very much outside the agency. It's controlled by the department. It's controlled by the White House. And in every administration, when I was at CDC, there were times when CDC was very open to be able to just reach out and talk to the public through the media. And there were times when every request for an interview, every request for information had to go through the department. And there were times when it had to go through the White House. What we're seeing here, though, is on a totally different scale in terms of CDC not being allowed to directly communicate to the public through the media. And you know, as Pierre was saying, there is an incredible amount of information on the CDC website, but it needs to be explained. It needs to, you know, there was something just recently where the CDC changed slightly some of the information in terms of risk of getting COVID infection from surfaces. And basically what they were saying in their material was that, yes, it can occur, but the most common way is through close contact, through respiratory droplets from being within 6 feet. But they weren't able to communicate this to the public. It just went up on the website with a notice. And so all the media reports were saying people don't need to worry about surfaces. And that wasn't the message at all. The message was, in terms of risk, this is low risk. For high-risk settings like hospitals and for high-risk individuals, you still have to pay attention to this. But without being able to directly say that to the public, to share that nuance, it was misinterpreted, and then it looked like a seesaw where CDC then had to revise what was on the website to say, no, well, it actually can occur this way, but it doesn't happen very often. That's just a small example of what happens when you can't explain what you're learning and explain what new information means.
Okay. So... You know what? Systems are complex. Bureaucracies are complex. And especially in times like this where there's there's an emergency going on, and I understand there's gaps in information here, but we're trying to probe what those gaps are and how they opened up, and frequently we look to leadership. And so Dr. Roland, I mean, is it something about how Dr. Redfield is leading the CDC that has led it to be able to be so quickly silenced? I mean, should Dr. Redfield be fighting harder with the White House or I don't know, politicking better so that all the things that Dr. Besser is saying the CDC could be doing, that they would be doing more publicly?
I think you have, if you compare to previous outbreak and the more recent, again, the Ebola outbreak, West African Ebola outbreak, there is two things that change. The director is different. The leadership at HHS and White House is different. So it's a combination of the two that allowed a better dissemination of the information. You have to have a director that is willing to go in front of the public very often and explain, and you also have to have a leadership that allowed the director to do that. And it seems that in that case, the system doesn't work. And again, you mentioned that the response is very complex. That's why you have to have several people explaining the different aspects. In 1 hour or even 2 hour press conference, the director of CDC cannot explain all the detail of the knowledge that accumulate day by day and could change every day. You have to have several people at different events explaining separate aspect of the response and of the knowledge that is acquired again every day. And that's not working. And it seems to me that it's not working mostly from the top, from the leadership at the HHS and maybe the White House level, because we have several people. When you look at the first press conference that happened, you had several people from CDC on the spot. You have Nancy Messonnier, you have Anne Choucat, you had Dr. Redfield, but now you have either nobody from CDC or one person from CDC.
Right.
And you cannot pass information that way.
Yeah. So Dr. Roland and Dr. Besser, hang on here for just a minute, because I want to bring into this conversation another voice, someone who's been watching the CDC for quite some time. Charles Seif joins us from New York. He's a journalism professor at New York University, a former science writer, reporter, and he recently wrote an article for Slate headlined, "The CDC has been on a steady decline. We're just finally noticing." Charles, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
So, has been on a steady decline. When would you pinpoint the beginning of that decline?
I'm sorry, I just lost you.
Oh, so I was just thinking, regarding the article that you wrote about the CDC having been on a steady decline from before this administration. So when would you pinpoint the decline as having begun?
Well, it's hard to say exactly, and I wouldn't – steady might be a little bit of an exaggeration, because there has definitely been an acceleration in the past in this administration. However, you can look back to years past, the Obama administration, and even before that, and see signs of declining transparency and of declining willingness to interact with the public in a way that is really necessary for a first flight government agency.
Okay, so tell me more about that. I've heard from reporters, and even in your writing itself, that in years past, the agency used to be very easy to ask the agency's expertise. The reporters could just call scientists up directly. Is that no longer true?
That is no longer the case, certainly at the CDC. I mean, way back when, you could reach almost any government official just by looking up their phone number and giving them a call. But that stopped happening. Around 2005, 2006, the government agency phone books started disappearing from the web. And nowadays, you really have to go through a press office who will connect you if they feel like it, rather than going to speak to the individuals directly. And we do have direct evidence. I've through Freedom of Information Act, I've uncovered emails showing that press officers are deliberately throttling the ability of scientists to speak directly to the press and to the public. And this, I mean, this again, this goes back to in 2012, there was a major tuberculosis outbreak in Florida, and journalists just could not get a CDC scientist on the phone. The chemical spill in West Virginia in 2014, which contaminated the groundwater, reporters were just having a terrible time trying to speak to anyone at the CDC who would address the issue. But unfortunately, that trend has gotten worse rather than better.
Okay, so Dr. Roland, you retired from the CDC only last year in 2019. Did you see this same reduction in transparency over during your career there?
There was a change. I don't know exactly when that happened. That came in particular from the state, where the state were complaining that CDC took the cover to him too quickly, and a lot of work was done at the state level. So it was really required from a message coming to CDC employees saying that they should refer, they should not answer, but refer the journalist to the state epidemiologist or the state laboratory or state health commissioner to answer the question, because that happened to their level and not at the CDC level that was involved secondarily when at the request of the state. So that happened, and that clearly put a hold on some CDC answer. Now, the fact that the press communication make the call to who the journalist is going to speak to, I don't think that is that bad. You want to be sure to have the best person with the best knowledge to answer to the journalist, and not having a single scientist from one area that knows one part of the story but not the complete part of the story.
Dr. Bestel, I'll come back to you in one second, but Charles, did you want to respond to what
yes,
Dr. Roland
yes,
said?
Yes, I did. I was hoping to respectfully disagree, because yes, there's always this excuse that the journalists don't know whom they want to speak to, that the press office wants to connect them with the best person. In fact, one, you have journalists who are specialists in this area, people who've covered epidemiology for decades and know whom they want to speak to. But also, it is a transparent fig leaf for blocking access. And I've got a...
Charles, are you still there? Okay, it looks like his line just dropped. We'll try to get him back, because it sounds like he had something quite interesting to share with us. Dr. Besser, you heard Charles Seif say a little earlier that he thinks as far back as 2005, there was this ratcheting down of transparency, not just in the CDC, but across several federal agencies. I mean, you were acting director there in 2009. Your response to that?
Well, I've seen this from two different angles. So I was at CDC for 13 years, and during the years I was there, there definitely was a movement towards centralizing approval for interviews. And there are many reasons for that, some having to do with wanting to ensure that reporters were speaking to the right person, some having to do with control of message, some, as Pierre was saying, during a crisis, making sure that if it's something taking place in Florida, that the Florida Health Department is the lead on communications. Since CDC, most people don't realize this, but CDC acts at the state level at the invitation of states, not because they have an independent authority. But then I was the medical editor and medical correspondent for ABC News for 8 years, beginning in 2009. Mm-hmm. And I experienced the same challenges of getting people I knew who were the key expert in a particular area, getting them to come on camera. And some of that just has to do with an administration's desire to control the message. But what we're experiencing now is on a wholesale different level. This was not what I'm referring to before was not during a period of national crisis where you need to be hearing from the agency. This was during everyday times where someone might be doing a particular story in an area and the agency may have a perspective on that. This is what we're seeing right now is a politicization of public health in a way that is detrimental to our nation's safety, to our health, to protecting lives, and to moving forward in the most productive way.
Well, we'll talk a lot more about the consequences of that for the nation and also for the future of the CDC as well when we come back. So stand by, everyone. We're talking about the CDC as the center of America's public health response and how to put it right back there in the center. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tomorrow on the show, since it will be Friday, it'll be our weekly news roundtable. We are going to be taking a look at the death of George Floyd at the hands of police in Minneapolis and the response across the country to that. And we want to hear from you. What is your reaction? How's your community responding? And what are the other stories that have happened to you, to this nation, to this world in the past week that you want to know more of? Give us a call at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for tomorrow's weekly news roundtable. Today, we are talking about the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and how absent this premier public health agency has been as the public face of knowledge and expertise and information in the COVID-19 pandemic. And I'm joined today by Dr. Richard Besser. He's president and CEO of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, served as acting CDC director in 2009, and also had worked at the CDC as an infectious disease specialist. Dr. Pierre Rolland is also with us. He retired from the CDC just last year. He worked there for 26 years, most recently as the deputy branch chief of viral pathogens. And Charles Seif also joins us. He's a journalism professor at New York University and has written about the CDC and other federal agencies, most recently in a Slate article that's headlined, "The CDC has been on a steady decline. We're just finally noticing." And Charles, do we have you back now?
I'm back. I'm sorry about those technical issues.
Okay. It is no problem at all. It is just our new reality over the past many months. So you were about to tell us before we lost you in that previous segment that you had something before you that you wanted to share. I wasn't quite sure what was going on.
Yes. I had an email to show that this was not an issue of guiding press off the people from the press to the right epidemiologist, but an attempt to control the flow of information and to throttle it. And this was an email dated August 31st, 2017, where it's you have a press officer saying, now all media requests have to go back up to the office of the associate director, even if they could be handled by sending a simple link. So, I mean, it's clear that the purpose internally is to make sure that the press goes through the channels that are controlled rather than directly talking to the people whom they really want to talk to and need to talk to inform the public.
Doctor, I'm not sure if you heard this because we were trying to get you back on the line, but in response to this observation that you're making, Charles, Dr. Besser had, had said that while that may be true, what is going on now in the midst of this pandemic in terms of the muzzling or sidelining of the CDC is categorically different. What do you think about that?
I think that this is definitely a much more grave issue than we've ever seen before. However, the slow turning of the thumbscrews has been going on for years. I mean, again, that email was from 2017. I think, again, we're just noticing the consequences of this wholesale attack on transparency. And throttling kind of access to the press is just one element of it. Going after inspectors general is another example of attempting to reduce external criticism of an agency, which for any scientist, for any scientific agency, external criticism is part and parcel of doing the job right. And by definition, if you are squelching that external criticism, you are not going to be able to do science right.
So we'll talk more about the politicization of the work that the CDC does. But I want to get a sense as to what impact all of this, even before the pandemic, has had internally within the agency. Dr. Roland, the CDC for decades was seen as the place where the brightest minds in infectious disease or epidemiology would want to go. Has that remained true, or has it become more difficult by the time you left to recruit new talent into the CDC?
I think it was, you can see it both ways. I think it's still the truth. You still have a lot of very good people at CDC that can teach, create the new generation of epidemiologists. I just want to be sure that you don't see CDC only as epidemiologists. There is some other people doing a lot of things, and the laboratory is very important. Everybody doing infectious disease epidemiology recognize that you need to have a good laboratory to get your information. And it's unfortunately at CDC what's happening in the for a while, not only with this administration, the laboratory have been put aside and there is nobody with coming from a laboratory background in the higher level of CDC. They're all epidemiologists, but not with the lab, not laboratorian, if we can say that, going up the chain. So that's happening. But on the other way, it's true that at the time, CDC was the only place where you can go. And now CDC trains so many people, and every state epidemiologist is usually, most of them, if not all, have been trained at CDC. So now they're able to train some other people. Some universities are the same. So we're not the only place. So in order to remain at the top, we need to have an excellent work and obviously no stain on CDC, because that has a huge impact in the future.
Dr. Besser, though, has the CDC been fallen victim to we've read and heard and seen that nationwide public health infrastructure has suffered from a lack of funding for many years. Has that not also touched the CDC?
Yeah, it clearly has. I mean, Pierre has a much better line of sight into the laboratory aspect of CDC, which has just been so incredibly strong over its history in providing support, not just domestically, but globally. On the epidemiologic side, a lot of the talent there comes in through the Epidemic Intelligence Service, and that's still recruiting amazing people in as epidemiologists who then go on to work at the state and local level. But there is that trickle-down effect. If we're not seeing the opportunities at the state and local level in public health, you have people who get trained at CDC and move into other areas. And over the past 15 years or so, there's been a loss of what's estimated to be around 60,000 positions in state and local public health. And that has consequences. That has consequences at CDC. And it has consequences for the entire public health infrastructure in this country.
Charles, what's your take on that? I mean, from your view, sort of looking at the CDC through a reporter's lens, have we seen a whittling away, or at least a reduction in the robustness of the agency over time?
Well, at least from my experience, from looking externally, yes. I mean, there's a clear power vacuum that has developed due to the diminishment of the CDC. Throughout my career, I've thought of the CDC as the powerhouse, the data gurus when it came to public health. That I've used CDC's Wonder database, which is one of the best in the world, for years to look at mortality and statistics about death. But now if you look at the CDC's website, which is where you used to go for expertise, it is not just a lack of clearly presented data, as Dr. Rolano mentioned early in the program, but it's also not up to date, and it's bad in certain ways. There are data errors that should be corrected that are not available on the website. And I don't really have an explanation for that other than the fact that the capacity is diminishing, the will to do this is diminishing, and perhaps there are forces that are preventing the CDC from fulfilling its role like it used to.
Hmm. Now, gentlemen, I hope you'll forgive me for saying this, but I feel like there's something that either I'm missing or that we're missing in this conversation, because we've talked about transparency, we've talked about politics. It seems like we're not really clear on sort of the internal shape or robustness of the agency. I'm still struggling to understand how this crown jewel of public health has so quickly been hobbled. I mean, Dr. Roland, let me just ask you, what am I missing in understanding how this happened?
I think several people mentioned that there is a decline in funding, a decline in position at CDC linked to funding, obviously. There is also an acceleration of the need from the population, not only from the U.S., but from everywhere. There is a centralization that is going on. You mentioned the website. The website was mentioned with inaccuracy. 10 years ago, when a branch has a website and want to change a value, it can do it very easily. Now, nobody but a small group have access to the website and can make any change. Even if you find a misspelling, it can take 2 weeks to be fixed on the website, because it has to be done by a centralized group at CDC that obviously has requests from everybody, and I don't know what the manpower is, but it's certainly low. So that's a big problem with the agency. It is the centralization, the top-down policy, instead of having something coming from the branch level when the work is done. And clearly during Dr. Gabbardine area, there was a creation to try to avoid silo of a middle structure of associate director for science, laboratory science, epidemiology, and other things. And that create a bureaucracy within the bureaucracy that complicate everything.
So Dr. Besser, you know, oftentimes people might roll their eyes at hearing how the sausage is made in a federal bureaucracy. But the reason why I'm pushing on this is because, as you've noted, we are in the middle of a crisis right now,
and
we need the CDC. So we have to understand what's happening with this agency and how to fix it. So if politics is the major driving force for the muzzling of the CDC right now, perhaps does that give us hope? Could it be actually rather quickly fixed or more easily fixed than if there were some really profound technical or bureaucratic challenges within the agency?
I think so. But, you know, one thing that hasn't been said, when I think about the years I spent at CDC, and it was during both Republican and Democratic administrations under Dr. Copeland and Dr. Roper and Dr. Gerberding. And then after I left, under Dr. Frieden, what you saw, you know, there's only one political appointee at the CDC, and that's the director. But what I saw with every one of those leaders was a strong defense of the agency, a strong defense for public health science, and they all seemed to have a line in the sand. And if politics stepped over that line, they stood up and said something. And we are not seeing that now. The CDC director is absent. We're not hearing from the CDC director. We're not seeing the agency being defended vocally. And that's very different, and that's demoralizing for the agency. As I talk to people who are there now, it is extremely demoralizing to hear CDC being beat up day in and day out in the media, and no one pushing back who is in that line of command. And that, I think, is distressing, but it also gives me hope that if there is change in the future and a move to remove politics or lessen politics, that the agency will be back in its position as the global leader in public health.
Well, so just let me briefly ask you, Dr. Besser, I mean, should Dr. Redfield be standing up and giving his own press conferences? Certainly he would risk the ire of the president. There's no doubt about that. He might even get fired as CDC director. But is that the kind of forceful defense that you're saying is needed now?
Well, you know, I think anyone who's been in the position of leadership that has involved politics or even a chain of command has had to decide for themselves what they're willing to do and what they're not. And, you know, each person has to decide where that line is and what it's worth to stay silent. And here, silence has consequences in terms of the agency, in terms of people's trust in the agency, in terms of people's willingness to wear a mask when they go outside. Something as simple as that.
Right. Well, Charles, let me ask you, you take this in your writing, you've taken this longer view of the diminishment of agency. It's not just the CDC. So do you think, and we've got about a minute and a half left here, do you think that it will actually take a longer time to turn this around and get the CDC back on track again?
Yes, I am not very hopeful that this agency will regain its reputation anytime soon. I mean, there really aren't that many national bureaucratic agencies where people from other countries say, wow, that's an agency I trust. The United States has a few of these, and CDC is one of them. The FAA is another. The FDA for drugs is yet another. And all of those have had serious problems in the past few years with trust, that they've been losing their trust because of political decisions. I mean, it takes up decades to build a reputation, but it takes a very short time to lose it. And people are talking because of in the wake of the 737 MAX crisis, no one trusts the FAA anymore. People are not trusting the FDA, and people are not trusting the CDC, and that's going to take a lot of work to fix.
Well, Charles Seif is a professor of journalism at New York University, former writer for Science Magazine and U.S. correspondent for New Scientist. He's recently written about the CDC for Slate. We have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Charles, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dr. Pierre Roland worked for the CDC for 26 years and retired in January of 2019. Dr. Roland, it was a great pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Richard Besser, president and CEO of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, was acting director at the CDC in 2009 and also worked there prior to that as an epidemiologist as well. Dr. Besser, thank you so much.
Thank you, Meghna. It was a real pleasure.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.